You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Screen Heroes. My name is Ray, and I am one of your hosts. I am joined by my other two hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hi, hi.
And guys, what are we doing tonight? Like, why are we here?
We're a little later than normal.
Yes.
On the live stream.
Yes. So let's just be honest about that. We had a family member pass this weekend, and we were making plans for the funeral tomorrow. It kind of threw everything into a loop. So,
but we had to talk about this.
So. We have to talk about this.
11 years, 22 films. It can't be missed. Yes.
The movie to end all movies.
Right. They're done. There's no other movies.
This is it. Yeah. This is the last one they ever were going to make.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. You know, sad for people like Tom Holland and Brie Larson who are just starting their career, but whatever.
I just meant movies in general.
Like, yeah,
just,
same here.
Yeah, we're canceling all
James
their movies.
James Bond's done, and, you know.
Yeah.
No more period pieces for costume design Oscars.
I did hear that the movie made over $1 billion this weekend.
Just during the weekend.
Just during the weekend, yeah. And it ended all wars. Just
because everyone was too busy watching the movie.
Yeah. And $350 million domestic opening, which is by far the biggest. We were guessing, a lot of people were guessing $300 million would be, but even people thought that would be too hard to hit because
there's just so many screens.
In a 3-hour movie, you can't turn them over as quick.
There's 4,800 screens showing this across the country.
Which is about 400 more than average.
AMC's went 24 hours for the entire weekend, so that helped a lot. And so, yeah, 350 million. The previous record was, I think, 246 or 264 by Infinity War.
All Thursday box office records that have ever been held.
I was talking with some people at work, and they wanted to know what I thought it might make opening weekend. And I said on the high side, I was like, yeah, you know, maybe opening weekend, not full run. Opening weekend, maybe 800 million. Yeah. And I thought that was kind of a lofty goal for opening weekend.
It's huge.
And I mean, it crushed that, clearly. Yeah.
Well, that would have beaten the record, which was Infinity War at 650-something million,
I
think.
And I expected it to break everybody. But it didn't occur to me that AMC would go 24 hours.
My new prediction is this might be the first movie to hit $3 billion in its entire runtime. Because this is going to play well into the summer.
Well, I'm very curious to see what the drop-off will be in week two. Because normally, opening weekend isn't like this because people see it the second or third week it's out. If everybody saw it opening weekend because there were a million showtimes available, it could have a 60, 70, 80% drop-off in week two.
It had a pretty big drop today from the weekend. Like, it did not break the record for the Monday. So, yesterday was the first day that it did not break a record in its run.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it made 36 million yesterday domestically.
Yeah, okay. Which is not a record.
Wow, I wonder what do you guys know what the Monday record is?
No.
Oh, okay, I was just curious. Because that sounds like a lot for a Monday.
Right? Yeah, it really does. But in context of like what the movie made over the weekend, it's really not that much. Yeah.
Derek predicted that Captain Marvel would get a boost and be pushed to the top three again, and it was. The weekend actuals, Captain Marvel made $8 million, which was above Curse of La Llorona.
Shout out to Shazamgate 2019. You know, they're the little movie that could made what, $5 million this weekend over. With Endgame in theaters. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
It is impressive. There were some theaters that were not showing other movies. They were only showing Endgame.
I'm sure smaller theaters, like, you know, they didn't really have a choice. That was the only movie they were going to have time to show.
Yeah, I mean, we were looking at Alamo Drafthouse times for the second weekend, and like, you can see Endgame like every half hour, you know, like, so there's a lot of movies that aren't being shown.
We were also looking at AMC's and all their seats were booked, like
a lot of them,
all the showtimes
through the second weekend.
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of the more premium stuff, like we were looking at Dolby and IMAX, a lot of those are filling up already. So
yeah, especially prime times, like, you know, noon and 7. And,
but we could go at 8 a.m. on Saturday to Dolby if
he
you want to.
He mentioned that to me. He was like, you want to
on
see
Saturday?
8 a.m.?
I'm working.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I would otherwise because I'm up at 6.
Well, I actually suggested opening weekend that we take Friday off and go to the 8 a.m. Friday show because AMC started adding these ridiculous times.
They had like 2 a.m. showings and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, who goes to those?
I mean, I guess if you couldn't make it and you got to see it, you know.
But
we did it. We all saw it. We're obviously talking about Avengers Endgame, if you don't know.
It's It's doing really well. Critics seem to love it. It's got really high scores all across the board. Rotten Tomatoes is sitting at a 95%. Metacritic hates everything. It's 78%. And IMDb has a 9.0. So great scores from all three major aggregate review sites.
And the Russo brothers are doing really good for Marvel. I think their lowest rated Rotten Tomatoes movie is like 88% for Civil War. So, I mean, they do very well.
Yeah.
No.
Marvel losing them is...
Winter Soldier is the lowest at 90.
What does Civil War have?
91.
Wow. Psh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my hot...
Oh, Infinity War is 85%.
That's what I was thinking of. Then.
Yeah, Infinity War is 85%.
This is my hot take. If you think Civil War is better than Winter Soldier from a film
we can't be
perspective,
friends.
Yeah.
Civil War doesn't age well, and Winter Soldier is still a great film all across, you know, so.
Yeah, I will still watch that movie and still love every second of it.
All right, so do we want to provide a spoiler-free take on the film before we dive into the details?
Well, I wanted to do the quick little news bit. I did say that we would touch on some news if something happened, and I think something happened. Director John Singleton had a stroke, went into a coma, and passed away this weekend. So, you know, rest in peace to him. If you don't know who he is, he was... formidable director. He did Boys in the Hood, and he was an activist for Black rights and Black arts. So check him out, and you know, rest in peace, sir. Okay. Yes, spoiler-free reviews, and then we will move on.
Maybe take a quick break, then come into the real thing.
Yeah. So I'll just start off by saying that... I'm thoroughly impressed with the amount of things they were able to pull off in the movie, and at no point did I really feel like it was dragging on. We talked last week about Hellboy feeling like really long, and it's a significantly shorter movie.
Hellboy was less than 2 hours long.
Yeah. Endgame does not have that problem. Endgame is essentially two Hellboys almost, and I never felt bored. I never felt like I was waiting for the end. I just wanted to see more of it. Which I think that in itself is a pretty big accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by all intents and purposes, this movie should have been terrible. Like if you look at if you look at what they actually had to do in this movie, this movie had no business being good, and it is good, and it's tough to kind of rank it in the other movies for me at this point, but it is good and it holds its own and it accomplishes the things that it needs to accomplish and. In a very impressive way, in a lot of ways.
In the end, this movie is a love letter to fans, and I am incredibly thankful for that because it didn't have to be. It could have been so many other things, but it wasn't. There were so many fanboy moments, fangirl moments that were in there just to make the fans happy, and they paid off. They worked in the context of the story, so I was very thankful for that.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. It is in my top five, so...
I will say, then this is spoiler-free, but it touches on far more of the MCU than I thought it would. Like, originally, the Russos said that, like, the minimum you needed to watch was Civil War and Infinity War.
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, okay. I felt like that was kind of a short list, but all right. And then I came up with my own list, and it was, like, 12 or 14 of the 21 currently existing movies. I'm like, well, that seems like a lot. And then we watched it, and it's, like, some of the ones that were not on my list
needed to be.
And that in itself is very impressive that the Russos clearly, everybody involved clearly knew what the MCU was, what it is, right? And it touches on so many corners of that universe. It's pretty crazy. I'm sure I missed some of that, right? But
you definitely did.
It's hard now to think of a movie, like there's a couple, but it's hard to think of movies you could skip and still get 100% of Endgame, you know, so.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick little break. We will be back shortly for spoilers.
The Heroes Podcast Network is expanding with a brand new show, Kaiju Curry House. Three guys from the UK will be bringing you a fortnightly show premiering on the 9th of April 2019. Our show will be discussing everything relating to kaiju, our childhood memories of discovering kaiju, our hopes of upcoming kaiju movies, where to get merchandise, lesser-known kaiju movies, games that star giant monsters, comics, books, TV shows, art. Did I miss anything? So, we invite you to listen to our ramblings, embrace your love of kaiju, and be part of the show. Drop us a line on Twitter at UK Kaiju and support us at patreon.com/heroespodcasts.
And we're back. So now we are going to discuss Endgame at great length. We're going
in detail.
Yeah. So there will be spoilers. Pause if you haven't seen the movie, or, you know, approach at your own caution. It's,
yeah, if you don't care about spoilers, then cool. Yeah. Come on in, join us.
Might be worth noting we may spoil some of the other 21 movies, yeah, too, at this point.
Right, but if that's they saw fair. This and haven't seen 21 other movies, then, you know, whatever.
There's a lot of people out there that didn't see all 21. If you didn't see Infinity War and you walked into Endgame, I mean, good
How
luck,
confused
I guess.
Were you?
but yeah, so... You guys, how do you want to kick? There's so much.
Well, I think we need
unpack.
To start at the beginning. So at the very beginning, we open with Hawkeye's family. Very dark scene to start the movie, and it was originally supposed to be in Infinity War, but because Clint hadn't shown up at any point, they thought it didn't make sense. So that's how they start. Yeah,
That part aside, because I don't know if I necessarily agree with that reasoning, but because most people would have known who he is by then. I actually think this works stronger
as an opening.
Right?
It sets the tone for the movie.
It's yeah. not a story consistency. It's a paycheck and contract thing.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, he is really the only family person in the MCU, right? Of any of our heroes, even our villains.
Well, Tim and Scott.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Scott, you're right.
But Scott is, he shares custody of his daughter, so, you know, she's not always in the picture.
Yeah. So I thought it was one of the best ways they could have opened the movie. It really brings you back to, like, it is a difficult thing to take us from the feeling that we had at the end of Infinity War and make sure we're at that moment to begin Endgame, because it's been a year, right? And there's not really a good way to get you back into that feeling just by watching Infinity War. So giving us a new scene with that same tone, I thought that worked really well.
Yeah, I think if anything, it could have been a little longer. I feel like it cut off a little too quick and you didn't get as much desperation. Like, I mean, the next time you see him, he's full murdering Ronin ninja guy. So, like, I don't know. I feel like it could have been just a little longer and that would have given a lot more impact. But yes, I thought that was a great way to start the movie. And actually, I'm not going to take full credit. I did predict that part too, but so have a lot of other people. So, but yeah, it was good. And it was a good tone setter for the beginning of the movie to kind of drop you down from the excitement of going in to see this movie and make you realize, yeah, you're in for something.
The way they did it too, the way they shot it and had him look around as he missed each and every one happen. He didn't actually see it happen. He just missed and saw all this dust in the air. It was a different way to show it. We had seen the dusting three different scenes in Infinity War watching characters get dusted, and once in Ant-Man, and this was a whole new take on something we had seen four times beforehand. So
actually dusting. Like, yeah, you just got to see like the little bit of dust. So that was an interesting choice.
And I feel like Hawkeye is probably in a position that more people were probably in than not, where they didn't get to see everybody disappear, mm-hmm. right? Where you came home from work and there was nobody home, or nobody ever came home from work or something like that. So I think it made it feel a little more grounded, right? Versus like a lot of our heroes seeing their counterparts disappear. So,
yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that puts us in the Benatar in space with...
Which is the scene we saw in the trailer, the very first trailer.
Yes.
They did a really good job making him look emaciated.
I would say everything in regards to the way characters looked in this looked really good. Like any of the aging, de-aging, in my opinion...
I'm gonna put the asterisk on there for Professor Hulk, but we...
Okay, I actually really liked the way he looked, but all right.
But overall, I mean, I thought that it looked really good.
So Tony and Nebula have, in my opinion, two of the best arcs in the whole story. And Nebula was really surprising because she's usually a side character that doesn't get a lot of growth or character development. And she's usually an antagonist.
But she's also the closest to Thanos in this movie. So it would make sense that she plays a bigger part.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really glad they gave it to her. And the scene of them playing paper football was cute.
I love that scene. I thought it was good. Because, like, what are you going to do, right? The ship's kind of dead in space, and they just have to pass the time until they die.
But this is a thing in Disney movies. When something stops running in space, it doesn't just stop in place.
No, it kind of floats. Right.
So, and this is not the first movie that Disney has done that in the last few years. It's like, come on, Disney.
I mean, you're right, but I don't know that it would have changed anything.
No, but at least don't show it just frozen in space, like it's, you know, stuck there in this one spot. It would be moving in the direction it was moving when the engines went out.
That's true.
So how do you guys feel about Deus Ex Carol?
I mean, look, I don't know about you guys, but I was pretty sure that was what was going to
happen. Yeah, I think we all knew it was either going to be her or Pepper. Right,
I was pretty sure it was going to be Carol.
Probably, but when he mentioned no, there's no rescue this time, you know, her being rescue, people thought that was going to be it.
And I think that's what they wanted you to think.
Yeah, probably.
See, I assume that like a lot of the MCU characters, they're never going to be named what they're named in the comic books.
Well, this is the first time the actual words Hawkeye,
right,
were said. They appeared on a screen in Avengers. They had their call signs when they were doing a little shootout, and then there was the "you mean the hawk" line
up in his nest.
And Thor.
Anyway, no, so I wasn't really surprised by that. It's a little silly because it's like, how could she? Like, why would she have found them?
Yeah.
See, her whole role in this movie kind of bothered me because she's so powerful that they basically had to sideline her the entire movie.
Yep.
So I don't know. That's a little annoying. But
well, it's part of that problem leads into my big problem with Thanos, in that he's incredibly inconsistent with his power set too. He's the strongest person on the planet when it's convenient, and he's also just as strong as Cap when it's convenient. And so he has the same problem that Carol does. And when you create, it's a Superman.
Well, so does Wanda.
Too.
Wanda is incredibly powerful in one scene, and then, you know, 2 seconds later, she's being beat down by something she could have destroyed. So, like, that was bothersome. Like, I don't know why she and Carol were nerfed so much.
I don't know that Carol got nerfed so much as Thanos got buffs to throw her around. Because, I mean, when you think about, if we're going to go right into this, in Infinity War, you know, it took Spider-Man, Iron Man, Doctor Strange, and everybody to they were able to incapacitate Thanos with the four of the six Infinity Stones.
Right.
In this movie, no Infinity Gauntlet, no stones. Thor, Iron Man, and Captain America couldn't do anything to him.
Those 9 years made all the difference.
Apparently, he had really aged and gotten weaker in those years.
It was
years
his prime
or something.
Back nine years ago. You really should have seen him back then.
That bothered me. That whole thing. I actually think the whole movie would have been better if they just left Thanos dead from the beginning, and the whole rest of the movie was about them trying to reverse everything, and they could find some other way of handling it, but leave Thanos out as a villain at that point.
Well, so, again, maybe we're jumping around a little bit, but I'm not sure how to connect my thoughts. Thanos bringing back younger Thanos creates a whole other set of problems for me, which is time travel in this movie.
Let's not dive into the paradoxes quite yet, but there's a lot of that.
I'm not diving into the paradoxes as much as just like there's just zero time travel consequences. No matter what you do, what you need to do, what was said would happen if you did it, none of that mattered. They just did stuff. And like that in itself created a lot of problems for me. And it's only really created a lot of those problems are really created because they wanted to bring Thanos back to the future.
Yeah.
No pun intended, but like that's what the goal was. Like they decided at some point really early on that they're going to kill Thanos and bring back Thanos in this movie.
Right. That's why I'm saying, I feel like it would have been better if they just had, after they killed Thanos off the first time, had the villain be trying to reinstate, you know, and fix what had happened and have that be the main dilemma. Plus you would have been able to shave off like 25 minutes of a movie.
Yeah. But I think the problem there is you then don't get what's probably the most
satisfying,
impressive
yeah.
sequences.
Well, you don't get the satisfaction of seeing, I mean, because the way he dies in the beginning is like so quick. And
we all wanted to watch him go out and be just beaten down. Like, watching his head get cut off was very satisfying.
I actually audibly, I don't do this often at movies, but I think three times in this movie, I'll see if you guys can predict the times as we go through it, but like three times in this movie, I actually said, oh shit. Because something happened that I was not expecting at all to happen, and that head chop was one of them.
See, for me, like, don't get me wrong, obviously you want Thanos to lose and you want to see him get beat down, but everything else about that fight is really what got me. Like, all the heroes, like, when they were, there were all these rumors about there's a shot with everybody, I'm like, no, there isn't. There's just how logistically, just in the real
world,
well,
there wasn't.
I mean, there basically was. What are you talking about?
That's
guys,
bad.
We really jumped ahead.
Oh, yeah.
We should talk about Tony getting back and everybody discussing things. We should talk about the
that
time
scene
jump.
Cap and Tony, where Tony's just like ripping Cap. I was like, oh my gosh, this
that scene
sucks.
Felt good actually. Did it? For me. Look, I love Cap. I really do. I really, really do. But Civil War created a lot of problems for me.
Right, but Tony wasn't exactly innocent in the whole thing either.
No,
He wasn't. He wasn't, but if I had to pick one guy to back, it would be Tony in that scenario.
But barely.
And I appreciated where Tony was coming from. What Tony had been through, what he had seen, what he needed Cap to be there for, and Cap wasn't there. That showed how important he is to him. Cap was important to Tony. They may not have been best friends, really, but Tony felt that he needed Cap. And that's an important thing to admit in front of everybody.
But that's a huge reason why they lost. And we knew that. We knew in Infinity War they were going to lose because everybody was so divided.
To be fair, though, Tony was supposed to call Cap and never did. He refused to, if I recall, in Infinity War.
He loses the phone.
No.
Okay. He loses that phone pretty early on.
But Banner makes a call instead. He had the phone, and Banner tells him to call him because this is life-ending.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that,
so,
that's fine.
You know,
but
you can blame Cap all you want, but there's equal blame to go between the two of them. And I thought, you know, it was a fine scene. It had to happen that way. Cap was not going to do that to Tony.
No, of course
that's
not. That's not
his
not who
type
he
of
is.
Character.
No, he stood there and he took the abuse.
Yeah, which is what he probably, as the leader, knew he needed to do.
Yeah.
Well, that's what those characters needed to do.
Yeah.
Right? That's just what we, it's what everybody needed to see.
Yeah. But it was heartbreaking because, for me anyway, you know, because I know Cap is not a bad guy, but it sure made him seem like a bad guy the way it was all.
Well, between the 21 movies before this, we had seen those two characters be the absolute best versions of themselves and the absolute worst versions of themselves. They got the best treatment out of any other characters, and they had the real hero's journey. So we've been on their side at times and we've had to step back and be like, man, I don't really like you at this moment. So, you know, this movie was a big payoff for all that, mm-hmm. all those emotions.
For me, it helps humanize Cap because there can be versions of him that are too
good.
Boy Scouty like Superman, mm-hmm. right? And I need flawed heroes most of the time. You know, there's exceptions.
That's where Marvel succeeds, is their flaws.
But with Cap, like, you don't get to see those flaws too much in the MCU. You know, Civil War kind of brought some of them out, but this was the first time the two of them really could go head-to-head about it.
Yeah.
So that scene was really important for me.
Sure.
So
I can definitely agree with that.
Okay, so then they head to this random planet with a garden, and they kill...
Thanos is picking some fruits.
Just these
with his burnt-up arm.
Giant-ass dragon fruit berry things, yeah. Like... Yeah, and he's a disabled farmer now.
Yeah. He's in rough shape.
With his armor hanging up on a scarecrow. And
which is straight out of the comics.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised he had enough strength to survive using the glove a second time to destroy the stones.
Right.
I find that impressive.
Carol
again.
Just swooping in and tackling him, I'm really surprised he didn't like break bones or something like that. Like, they should have...
No, he's... I mean, Thanos is generally exceptionally tough.
Right, but he has gone through two snaps to do stuff, and he's...
And a giant axe to the chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know.
So, like, it should have broken some bones. That was a huge...
You would think. Maybe it did. I mean, yeah, would he have true. Shown if it didn't?
He didn't get back up.
That's true.
To be fair, you know, so it very well may have. He was not
I think
good
he
shape.
Was mentally defeated at that point. He was done. He had done what he wanted to do, and that was it. Yeah. So he didn't care
he
what
said
happened.
That,
yeah.
Right? His last mission was to destroy the stone so nobody could, quote, be tempted. Right, and then that's it. He has nothing else to accomplish.
Yeah.
So I think he didn't care about getting up because if this was the end, then this was the end.
Yeah.
But then the head chop happens, and I was like, "Oh my god, is this a Disney movie?" Literally, the daughter gets sprayed with blood across the face of her father. Head.
But it's not red blood. So
I love
okay.
that she right. said gross. Like that was such a non-Nebula moment.
The head also. Like, what is this? What Disney is this? I was very happy.
Well, and there was a lot of more adult language.
Yes,
in this
there was.
Movie.
They said shit like over 10 times. Yeah. I can't believe they got away with that.
They must have had to pay off some people to keep that PG-13 rating. I think
there's no rhyme or reason to the MPAA.
There's
rules. Admit themselves that they just have a discussion about each film and that's it.
I actually don't think they needed all those shits. Some of them felt like, why are they even
it feels weird this? When Cap curses, especially given Age of Ultron,
right?
You know, like I'm okay, like if he doesn't curse that's fine, right? But having him curse just felt weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
After he chastised other people for doing it.
But
yeah.
Not really that as much as just it just seems weird coming out of him. That's all.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he's grown.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So after that, we get back to Earth and it's 5 years later. There is a huge time jump and it starts with Ant-Man being stuck in...
The real hero of of Endgame is
the
rat.
Splinter.
The rat that walked across the thing. What the... Oh my god. Yeah. Like that part was a little... For me, it was like, okay, really?
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be highly intelligent, so I'm not sure why they couldn't have just, like, given him a line of dialogue
something.
That said, hey, I inverted XYZ.
He's a thief. He's not a scientist, so his skill sets are different, and getting out of sticky situations seems like it would be a Scott Lang thing to do.
Well, not only that, but all the other Avengers, you could just have a throwaway line about how they were looking into Hank Pym's research while they were researching things, and then they go find the van and flip it on. Like, you know, there could have been, there's any number of reasons that weren't a rat walking across a control panel.
It is a little silly, right? Because then it's like, okay, so everything is fixed because a rat happened to step on a control panel.
Yeah, but
like,
if it hadn't, then
the
whole world would still be the way it was.
We also get our third community appearance in the MCU by Ken Jeong.
Yeah. Everybody in my theater, well, not everybody, but a lot of people laughed.
Yeah, same here.
It was good to see him, but, you know.
I'm really glad he didn't talk because, you know,
he taken me out of it.
He does have those kind of moments.
It was intense, though, when, you know, Scott goes to the memorial and he's looking for his daughter's name.
And instead he finds himself.
That's got to be a freaky moment, you know?
Yeah.
He clearly doesn't understand
it. Especially
when
he thinks he was only gone for 15 minutes or something like that.
Five hours.
Is that what it was? Okay.
I mean, that's got to be a real, it's got to mess with his head, right? And of course, you know, we see Tony, he's got a family now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I was going to say Scott and Cassie's reunion was the first time I got a little choked up. Like Hawkeye stuff was very surprising that that's how they opened, but I got a little choked up when I saw Scott and Cassie back together and she's an adult now, you know, she's 18, 19 and she's been without her dad for 5 years. So, you know, nobody else is coming back. So that's weird.
It is. Yeah. It's an intense moment and, you know, Tony kind of gets his happy ending, it kind of seems like. You know, he's got the farm on the lake. He's got his daughter that
his
wanted.
His wife,
You know, that he talked about in Infinity War and all that kind of stuff. He's still building suits. He's still building suits, even though he's done.
Well, he talked about building Pepper a farm in Ultron, just like Clint.
It's another little weird thing with his character where he's constantly done being Iron Man and constantly building new Iron Man suits at the same time.
Iron Man is an addiction for him and he doesn't ever want to give it up and he's never going to.
Mm-hmm.
Pepper calls him out on it. So Scott and Cap and Natasha all visit Tony.
Well, we should probably talk about the Scott and Natasha scene. You know,
and
or
Cap?
Cap scene, the Cap and Natasha scene. Sorry.
So Cap is helping people through like grief counseling for those,
which I loved. Oh my god, talk about like wholesome. You just want to hug this guy.
Yeah.
Well, he's
first
just
of
him.
All,
he's just, you know,
cameos by Joe Russo
and the first
Jim
openly
Starlin,
gay character in the MCU.
Which, first of all, like, stop calling that representation, because it's not. It's a good nod. There's no reason why the character couldn't be any which way, and the fact that he was, and it came from the director himself. That's a statement
him being in the movie kind of was distracting in that scene. Because I was like, he's not a great actor, and so it was a little distracting. But that scene was great.
And you're no Jon Favreau, sir.
I think, so I haven't really cared about Natasha in any of these movies. She's been a character, but she's been a side character and not one that I've really cared about. I guess in Winter Soldier, I think I started liking her there a little bit, but... man,
she had to go pick up a fossil.
Seeing her get emotional in this movie, and you know that one-on-one, very personal scene with her and Steve was good, and like it really made me care more about her. And honestly, through the whole movie, she might have been my favorite part.
So this is the first film I believe that they gave her deep characterization, that they really dug in. Avengers: Age of Ultron tried that really hard, and the problem is they tried it with a romance that nobody else in Marvel believed in. It was really Whedon's baby to cultivate that, and when he dropped off, nobody else felt that they needed to continue that storyline, so all of a sudden all characterization of her just dropped, but Hulk's
and she just went back to being spy.
Exactly.
Just, although in Winter Soldier she did get more, like
Winter Soldier was before Age of Ultron.
Was
though.
It?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it was 2014 versus 2015, fair enough, then. So that
point
was
stands.
Yeah,
your point stands. I mean, not mine.
And it was the Russos too.
Yeah.
Who, you know, they care about
characterization a lot and utilizing characters. So.
But Natasha had a great storyline in this, and right now she's basically coordinating the Avengers. And when you learn more about her, which they don't tell you much, it's because that's all she has in this world. She's done. S.H.I.E.L.D. is gone, so she doesn't have her former employer. Her mentors are gone. Nick Fury's gone. And she can't trust Alexander Pierce. And, you know, he's gone now. So, like, she just has... Cap is her best friend in the whole world. She has Carol, Rocket.
Well, don't forget about Barton.
Nebula. Yeah. Yeah, she can't keep track of him. So she's sending James Rhodes...
to find him.
Yeah.
Because they know what he's doing, and she can't accept that.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we see Carol's new haircut.
Shout out to Carol's haircut. And
I loved it.
Did you? Because I've heard the opposite from more people than I have that actually liked
it.
I didn't mind it. It was fine. But...
It's just a haircut. I don't care either way. Like, I know why they did it, because Carol goes back and forth with long hair and short hair in the comics.
Plus, she's obviously not going to have the 90s hair anymore. Like, come on.
I appreciated the nod to the comics without making it look cartoony.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it looked good. I thought she looked good.
Even better, in the comics, Carol and James Rhodes have a relationship, and they shared... some cute eye contact, and she told Rhodes to be careful. So whether or not that gets played up or dropped, it was just a cute little nod as well. So that was a good scene. And watching Scarlett Johansson played the shit out of this character in this movie.
She did really good.
She did. She did a very good job. But then that's when Scott shows up, and we find out that time travel is a possibility, and they go find Tony. And that's where we get back to his little lake house.
So is this confusing to anybody else? Like, has he been working on time travel, or was he able to just figure out time travel in like 5 minutes?
I think he probably
Tony?
Touched it a few times in between that 5 years, because he couldn't. He wanted to also figure out something.
So he just had a random breakthrough that day?
I think so.
So, I mean, it is hard to know how much time passed between when they came to ask him for help and when he figured it out, because it seems like it's like 3 days maybe.
But it could have been up to a month, I think.
It seemed to me like it was that night, that like right before in bed he went, he was like, run this simulation, and then it's magically good, you know? There was not really a good way of handling that. I mean, it wasn't handled well, I don't think.
I agree with you, and I don't think it was necessary to have him push them away just to go and do the exact thing that they asked him to do anyway. Like,
well, it just shows that he can't quit being Iron Man, no matter how much he tells people that he's done.
I know, and I get that.
It's character.
But since Pepper doesn't have a problem with it, you know, at this point, I just...
Right, that's true.
Watching her, like, be almost amused. Like, she used to get defeated when he would go back into this stuff and put
and
himself
annoyed,
in the middle.
And like, threatened to leave him and stuff like that, yeah.
And she did leave multiple times. Like, they were broken up in Civil War. Yeah. And that's why, well, that's the in-story version why we didn't get to see her, but...
But in this movie, she was almost like a supportive wife. She was as supportive of Tony as I've seen, and I thought that was actually kind of nice, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, she has some good moments in the movie. The way he comes up with the solution, yeah, it's very fast, right? Yeah. I appreciate it in... it's Iron Man 2, actually, where he's building the collider in his house.
Yeah.
Right. And that you can see Cap shield in the background and stuff like that. Right. Yeah. Like that.
No, it was holding up a part of the laser.
Right.
Thing.
Sorry. Yeah. Like that scene.
And Coulson was really upset.
That scene makes more sense to me. I can't believe I'm saying something good about Iron Man 2 here, but that scene worked better for me than this montage.
Right. Because at least you got to see him working on something and like sweating and turning wrenches and, things like
that. The simulation wasn't great, but the conversation he had with Pepper afterwards was great. And the conversation he had with Morgan about the juice pops and I love you 3000.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the best parts about Tony is his side characters, the people he... those movies have created, because Pepper and Rhodes and even Happy are more interesting than some of the side characters we get in the other films.
I do like that they gave him something to lose, though. Like, everybody's lost everything. Everybody's lost everything.
He kind of ended up on top.
Right. So he's really the one who has something to
except
lose.
Except for
here.
The whole Peter thing.
Yeah.
Well, right.
And that's what draws him back in.
Is the chance to bring him back. But he has that caveat, though. He's like, we can't change the last 5 years, which, well, we can talk about that later. That creates an interesting problem. But, he's not going to risk losing his family.
So he turns him down, but he still figures it out, and they go to Professor Big Brain.
Right.
They call him the Bigger Brain.
Yeah, I really don't know how to feel about Professor Hulk. I think mainly because we don't get to see any of how it came to be.
Yeah, his character arc happens before the movie even starts. You just kind of hear snippets of what happened.
Because we heard, nothing happened in Infinity War. We got only Banner and now only Hulk. And
well, no, God. I mean, is that Hulk or is that Banner? Because it seems like it's Banner to me.
I would just kill for an in-between. Right?
I think that is the in-between, right? Like, you get the Hulk strength and Banner's intelligence.
The actual time in-between.
Maybe that's what the Hulk and She-Hulk show will be.
I think Professor Hulk works for the Hulk and She-Hulk show.
I agree.
Because, I think I really enjoy seeing a Savage Hulk on screen.
It actually sold me on seeing him in that first scene when they're in the diner. Actually sold me on a She-Hulk show, because I was like, okay, they can make it look, because I thought he looked good.
There were a couple moments I was not a fan, but
the whole concept was just odd to me, because it seemed like he was 100% Banner, but he just looked kind of like Hulk.
When he was smaller. Like, this is the smallest the Hulk has ever been.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine. He doesn't get all the Hulk strength.
Right.
Because he's not as angry. Yeah, exactly.
But it just didn't seem like there was any Hulk. And so the fact that he looked like that, the only reason Professor Hulk is in this movie and not just Bruce Banner is because of the gauntlet. Because they have to have someone use the gauntlet who can survive. So that way they can have the big thing at the end.
Thor.
Kind of been a character arc for him, though, for a while, him wrestling with Hulk and everything, so I don't think it's I'm not gonna just say it's just for that, but that is probably a big part of it.
It felt very rushed,
because the angry Hulk would probably not just be like, sure, let me pick up this gauntlet and think about the things I need to think about,
and we don't really
work.
Know what would happen to Thor if he used the gauntlet.
Well, Hulk said, I'm the only one that could survive, or something like that.
It'd probably be a similar Hulk thing.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, because Thor doesn't seem to be even as strong as Thanos most of the time.
Ragnarok.
Depends on the scene.
They had to nerf him in Infinity War because he was so OP in Ragnarok. And
that's why he wasn't in Infinity War really fighting anybody. And
well, they don't nerf him in Infinity War. They nerf him in Endgame. Because in Infinity War, he takes the power of an entire star.
But here's the thing. If he is in more of the movie, if he actually faces Thanos... Again, not at the very beginning where he ambushed, but later on, like, he could have kicked his ass.
Right, so they sidelined him like they did Carol.
Right.
Yeah.
Sent him on his own quest.
Right.
Exactly.
Keep him out of the way. And in Endgame, then they nerfed the hell out of him. Let's talk about Thor for a minute.
And New Asgard.
I loved New Asgard.
That was cool.
That was awesome, yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciated that.
I think it's cute that
it was a nice nod to Ragnarok, that Asgard, and a lot of people might not have picked up on that. But we obviously did. That Asgard isn't a place.
It's a people.
It's a people, yeah. And so, yeah.
And I love that it's in Scandinavia country.
Yeah, gorgeous. Like Viking territory.
And
like
they're
it's
all
perfect.
Fishermen.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's very so fitting. Perfect.
I just don't know how to feel about Thor. Because there's some laughs. Like, don't get me wrong.
Or even Korg.
The Big Lebowski joke.
Thor.
I laughed so hard at that Big Lebowski joke that nobody else in the theater seemed to get.
Well, we all knew it was coming. Like, come on.
Yeah, there's... Okay, so I have never, ever, ever had a problem with Thor's look, but his wig and his merkin on his face was awful. Like, they were really bad. They could have done a lot better. And I am all for dad bod Thor. I really am.
That's beyond dad bod.
I really...
Speak for yourself.
Here's the thing. My Thor can look however he wants. It's very Norse gods to have multiple body types. So that doesn't bother me because they age and they adapt and they change. They're not perfect like Greeks stay perfect. I'm really pissed off for a couple reasons. One is his PTSD was not taken seriously and it was played up for laughs multiple times. And
almost the whole time.
I felt really slighted by that because Tony's PTSD and Bucky's PTSD has been taken very seriously. And aside from his conversation with Frigga in Asgard, all the other time it was completely like mocked.
Yeah.
I'm tired of movie tropes just being like when a person gives up, they automatically make them fat. Like there's other ways to show people giving up and clearly being a drunk and only playing Fortnite with your two best buds instead of, you know, actually doing something about the world is giving up. So I don't know why he had to be fat as well. It's just a stupid trope in films. And as a plus size woman, like I work really hard and I'm still fat, so I'm not lazy.
I mean, first thing, there were a lot of very happy cosplayers seeing that because now they can finally cosplay as Thor without having the body of a god.
Which is why I'm totally fine with
so,
a bigger Thor.
I didn't have a problem with the PTSD being mocked because of Thor's character from the last two movies. His whole tone of his character has changed. He is now very rarely serious.
Yeah, he's a comedic
and more
relief.
Humorous. So, and there was enough serious in this movie. I understand, like, in the real world that mocking PTSD is not okay and nobody should do that. But in the movie context, I think it was fine. I don't think it was meant as a slight towards people in real life.
Oh, no, I don't
like
think
that.
It was a slight. I think it's just an unfair scope that they put on it. Because
also, I loved,
you know,
Korg and Meek playing Fortnite. I don't care about Fortnite. Fortnite annoys me.
It could have been any game, but
yeah.
They actually had a deal with
Korg
him set
great.
Up. So
I'll love
whatever.
Korg no matter what.
But... Tony gets to be comedic and serious, and I don't see why Thor can't be the exact same.
He has serious moments, but it's, yeah, mostly funny,
yeah.
It seems like.
I think
Bucky's
part of the problem,
never funny, so that's a weird comparison, but...
Yeah. I think part of the problem for me is that his PTSD completely sidelines him for, like, the significant majority of the film. And, again, that was just a way to get him out of the way because he is so powerful. It's why you don't see Carol in most of the movie either, right? It's that problem of these are the two big powerhouses. And if you have them around all the time, just send them in to do everything.
And once you bring back Wanda and Doctor Strange, why are the others even fighting? Like,
I mean, it creates some problems, right? Because the MCU started very grounded compared to most superhero stuff, right? You had a normal dude who was building suits, and then you had, you know, Cap was kind of a super soldier, but only, like, you know, his strength was still, we didn't really know the scope.
That was before he
ability.
Could sling motorcycles around and, you know, do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, and
rip
hold back
logs in half.
Hold back a Titan and
right.
Things like that, right? And then, so then things started to escalate because, yeah, you Thor became more powerful with each film, and, you know, you started getting Doctor Strange, and you got, you know, some of these just, they're literal godlike characters.
There's really only one other character that in the comics that is more powerful than what we've seen on screen, and I hope they never bring him to light because he is straight up a Superman ripoff.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, that's a problem that you have. It's why, you know, the DCEU had to figure out what to do with Superman, right? When you have a character that powerful,
All the DC characters are that powerful. Well, so.
Most of them, yeah.
I mean, Batman is with prep time. He's prep better time than everybody.
That's true. You're right. But that's my point, though, right? Like, you run into issues with story writing, and so you just have to get them out of the way. And I think that's what's disappointing is Thor became such a joy to watch, whether it was in Ragnarok or Infinity War, that I was disappointed.
Well, let's also kind of face it. Like, he's funny and cracks jokes in Thor 2, at Avengers and Avengers 2. He had comedic moments. Like,
but the humor definitely changed.
Yeah. I don't mean humorous. I mean, I enjoyed watching him. Got it. Right? Who he became in Ragnarok and Infinity War, I really just gravitated towards and wanted to see. You know, there maybe not all of it was perfect, you know, but like, when he's holding open the gate so the sun can like melt the metal, like, it's just a really cool thing.
Agreed.
You know, and so I just wanted
him
to see
coming
more.
Down onto right. the Rainbow Bridge in Ragnarok,
or him coming down into Wakanda, like, those were really so epic good. Thor moments. Mm-hmm. And that part, he was not nerfed at that point in that movie.
He was not
beast.
So I wanted to see Thor,
but the conversation. I get it. Everybody had to have a storyline, and the storyline, what if finally losing everything actually hit Thor? Because he did. He had lost everybody in his life. He had friends murdered and family murdered and people betray him and his planet and his ship and his friends. And now, like, it made sense to have him actually get to him. And
yeah, I'm definitely not saying it's an inconsistency or it's bad writing. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I was disappointed to not see what we had.
You wanted Thor moments.
Yeah.
That's all. That's
same
just
here.
A personal preference.
He's
it's
gotten
not
a lot of moments, though. I feel like this movie was other characters got that maybe don't get those kind of moments, got those moments in this movie. And that was an offset.
Let's talk about that, because this.
Well, the ones I'm thinking of are towards the end of the movie.
No. Okay. The next step. So I think we should talk about Ronin Hawkeye, because I. Like, this is.
The one shot scene?
This
or the
is
no
one
cut scene,
of the. Movies where I'm actually really impressed with his storyline. I was invested and I thought he was interesting and I really enjoyed having him on screen. And I don't usually like Jeremy Renner. I don't like him in most films, so
I like Hawkeye in this especially because he is the most human there, right? Except for Natasha, right? Those two are the normal people. Right, they don't have suits of armor, they don't have super strength, they can't fly, none
no
of that
science
kind of
behind them or anything.
Right, they just have their human abilities. And so seeing him, you know, and later some of the stuff that he does to keep fighting what he can do is cool. It's cool to see him not give up when he easily could have. You know, like, yeah, he freaking snapped, don't get me wrong, but but he's going after bad people, right? And I appreciate that, even though he's got nothing left.
So when it's him, it's okay, but when it's a Punisher, you don't like it.
I didn't say that.
I know, I'm just kidding.
That's not what I said at all. I'm saying that he lost everything, and he could have ended up like Thor. He could have, but he didn't. Right?
He turned into the Punisher without guns.
I mean, he did kinda. Turn into the Punisher.
Yeah, and I mean, I can appreciate that he still was fighting for something. You know,
yeah, I feel like he would have turned into Thor if he stopped, you know, if he sat down and reflected, like if he had gone back to that empty house with all of his kids' belongings and had to face it, then, yeah, I actually think that's why he volunteers to jump back through time first as a newbie, because like
he's got nothing left to lose.
Homicidal to the point of suicidal.
Yeah. Well, that also the other point in the movie that comes later is evidence of that. But yes. I, as Ronan as a character, he was fine. His suit was cool. And the one shot scene.
It's more like Clint Barton.
Sure. Clint, you know, that one scene where he was fighting the Yakuza guy and it's like a one shot thing around. Cool. Yeah, that was kind of cool. But overall, he just was like edgy, like emo guy. And I, you know what? Whatever. He went and got a wacky haircut and a tattoo sleeve. And like, you know, that makes him all of a sudden cool. No, but I get the point on the he was the human. And sure, I just think they went maybe a little too far. Did he really need like a tattoo sleeve in this weird
haircut?
Well,
I'm not talking about any of that stuff. I mean after after the time travel happens, right? And I don't want to jump, I don't want to miss all of that, but just after that, when he has the gauntlet and has to protect it, I like
that was a good scene.
You know, I like what he has to kind of go through to keep, like, he's the only one right now who's stopping everything, you know. And when you think about how powerful everybody else is, and like it's all resting literally in his hands right now, like that's a cool moment.
So.
Him running from the Outriders, I think they're called, was good.
Yeah, that was what we were just talking about. Yeah, I think that's a neat scene.
But so can we talk about the time travel?
So I think it was about where we're at this point. Okay. We didn't touch on the Ant-Man time travel scene when it's like, instead of him traveling through time, the time is traveling through him, and he's like a little baby and an old man. And
It's funny when Tony pulls up and he's like, did he turn into a baby?
And actually that scene when everybody's coming in and like there are the tacos keep getting knocked out. Scott Lang was a treasure in this movie. Seriously, like we've needed him in Avengers movies before this, because he for me was the most human, you know.
Human acting, sure.
He was just a, like, Clint is a trained spy, all this other stuff. Scott is just a dude, right? That has a suit that can make him do stuff. So
I mean, he knows how to use it, though. He can become giant man,
but he's a little bit of a fanboy.
If he used the suit, he could do it too.
He doesn't have the suit,
right?
I'm sure Clint could use an Iron Man suit if he was given one.
I think that's a little more complicated, but
I mean, is it?
Yes, I think it is.
I mean, Pepper figures it out really quick.
Can we just agree on the fact that Hulk bringing Scott tacos? Yes.
Oh, I love that.
It's
so much.
Good.
It's so wholesome.
It's cute. I love, look, Paul Rudd is a gem. I love him.
And I want him in every Avengers movie going forward.
Like, I hope he continues. I hope we get, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp, whatever they call it. You know, I want more.
See, but I loved him more in this movie than I did in the Ant-Man, in at least the second Ant-Man movie, because I loved him being like this normal guy that's like around all these enhanced, super trained people, and he's just trying to fit in, and he sucks up the Cap all the time. I loved that.
So for the time travel, they have enough Pym particles for one round trip each, plus like two test runs. Right?
One test run.
Right. Which they then do two test runs, because they turn him into the baby thing and all that, and then Clint. Well, anyway. So, all
right. No.
Clint's
no,
is
this,
the only test
this
run?
This is after the baby thing, okay. Yeah. And he accidentally wastes it.
Yeah.
Right, no, I remember that. So Clint does the test run. So that means now everyone gets one round trip, right? Cool. They make a big deal out of that, right? How did Cap and Tony take another jump and still make it home?
Because they went and got Pym particles from 1970.
Oh, they stole more Pym particles.
Yeah,
okay, right.
They went back to...
There was a whole scene about it.
Yeah, I forgot they stole more Pym particles. I remember them getting the Tesseract. I forgot about
it
the
was
Pym
like...
particles. Because that's what the scene really focuses
okay,
on.
Okay, but if we're going to go
the
there...
I forgot about that.
If we're going to go there, then here was where my first...
We're going to go to the individual scenes. So do you want to talk about New York first? Or do you
want
to talk about the Washington, D.C.?
This is New York.
Okay, talk about New York then.
They had the time stone at that point. So why do they need to go get more Pym particles and all this other shit?
Right.
They like,
well, no. So that they do kind of explain that.
How?
So they have to take. Well, do they know how to use the time stone?
Okay. So Hulk doesn't know how to use any stones, but magically he can put on the gauntlet and make everything good again. Like, so I don't buy that people need training to use these stones. Thanos doesn't need any training to use the stones. Hulk puts on the gauntlet and uses all the stones.
Well,
Doctor Strange didn't really use any new train at all with the... He didn't do any time travel before he used the stone.
I mean, look, I mean, that's fair, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
that was my first major problem with the time travel in this movie. That one part there, when they're like, how we've only got this one particle. It's like, you kind of got like the ultimate thing here. You could
right. Because if Thanos had gotten the time stone first, then nothing would matter.
Right.
Right. And I think that's part of the problem, right? Is that the time travel there's no consequences to any of the time travel. So yeah, they have the time stone. And rather than use that, they use the Pym particles.
The scene with the Ancient One was—I liked that
great
scene, though,
scene
with him when she knocks. Because how many people have crumpled the Hulk? Thanos.
Well, he's only kind of the Hulk, but
okay. Thanos and the Ancient One, pretty much as far as I can remember, that's about it.
Now, Ray, you had an opinion about the Ancient One scene because we talked a little bit about this.
Did I?
Yeah. Do you remember?
I don't. No,
okay. I quite like that scene.
Well, yeah, I thought it was really cool. It's one of my favorite scenes actually in the movie, which is kind of weird.
What did I say? I don't remember. I've made a lot of comments about this
film. I think you were saying it was your favorite scene with Hulk in it because Bruce just gets knocked into the ghost form. Maybe you were kidding.
No. I like my Hulk savage. I really do. And the fact that we've seen him kind of aim it and control it to a certain degree,
It's
Hulk.
Happened in the comics, too. It's not like that's completely outrageous.
I know. Every version of Hulk that we've seen on screen has actually been in the comics. And yeah. I am really glad they didn't go the Joe Fix-It route.
Right.
Like,
oh,
that's
God.
Ridiculous.
Mr. Fix-It would have been not good.
But I like Banner. I like him a lot. And his conversation with the Ancient One was really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just like how it goes. They're back and forth. Their banter is good. And she's made up her mind, but he's still able to get through to her.
Yeah, by just mentioning Doctor Strange. And he sacrificed it. Oh, well, why didn't you say that from the beginning? Here you go. Take it.
It's who you know.
It is who you know. But speaking of the New York scene, there are a few things I really love about them.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot.
America's ass. Because I really love America's ass.
So, who didn't love America's ass?
Right?
Let's get real.
We'll get to that. But I just want to talk about the alternate takes that we got to see of scenes we have watched dozens of times.
And this was actually in all the time travels. We got to see new scenes from movies we've seen.
But this one, I think, for me, was the most significant because it's the first Avengers movie, right? Like, the first Avengers movie we've talked about before was a big deal in 2012. It's funny now to think about the scope of the 2012 movie versus the scope of Endgame and talk about them on a similar level, but it was a big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So seeing, you know, the end scene where Loki's on the ground, you know, he's saying, I think I'll take that drink now. Seeing that from a different angle, it's fun. It's really cool.
Well, watching Hulk rip off his shirt and he's like, I guess. He's like, it feels gratuitous. Yeah. I'm like just do it.
it was just really cool. And, you know, just getting to see the different aspects of it was a lot of fun. It did. The Cap scene is great. When he fights himself,
yeah.
I think it's really great.
I know.
But right, before
when he says the line, though, when he says
before
the line,
that even happens, the elevator scene, right? Like, I was like, the elevator scene from Winter Soldier is one of my favorite scenes in the entire MCU.
Scene. And we're all watching this
and it's
happen.
Literally all the same people. I'm like, oh my God, am I getting another elevator scene? And then he does, Hail Hydra. And I was like, no.
It was so well done.
Yeah.
What a great way to make that shitty moment in the comics so fun. Like,
it was super cool. It was perfect.
In 2015, we had one of our first episodes about that moment in the comics. And we all talked about how shitty it was and how much we hated it. And this kind of made
Chris
it fun.
Evans but saves it.
Chris
another paradox. Now what happens? Like, because everybody thinks that Cap is Hydra, so like we don't see it happen. But after Avengers happens, does the dude like walk up and go?
There's no consequences.
Hydra, and Cap's like, pow!
Hang on, yes. You think that's a big deal? Okay, where the fuck is Loki?
Yeah, Loki takes the Tesseract and then goes.
But Loki is in movies that take place after Avengers.
Right, yeah, like he's supposed to be
alternate timelines,
in cell.
Right? Like Loki's gone; he's just gone now.
Well, they've said that the show is going to be him traveling through important parts of time, and you know,
are they
causing
just
going to
blue screen him into other movies?
I would imagine it's more like historical.
Maybe he
things,
prevents
but...
Malekith and Ooh. The other guy from killing his mom.
There we go. But like that's a huge deal though, because he is a very big part of
well,
Ragnarok.
It's very clear that there's a lot of alternate realities being formed from this movie. So no matter they did to not fracture the timeline, like there's some new timelines.
The thing
guys.
Is, all that means though is that only one of those timelines is things hunky dory. There's a billion other timelines where everything's shit, right? So,
but it's different kinds of shit, Derek. Yeah. It's
different
kinds.
Levels. At least everybody's alive,
right?
In that timeline, but not in any of the other timelines.
Yeah.
True.
Right? Like, that's my problem. It creates a lot of problems there. The Cap scene is really fun. When
all of Cap scenes in New York is really fun.
When Past Cap says that I can do this all day. And
he's like, I know.
I love it.
He's so annoyed by himself.
It's so good. I am a little sad that he doesn't say it later in, like, for real during the fight.
I'm glad he didn't.
I don't know.
That line has been overused. They should have, if they were going to do that, they needed to do the scene where they're, like, silhouetted to each other, him and Thanos, and he goes, as long as one man stands in front of you, you haven't won.
That would have been
like
cool
that.
Too.
That would have been my preferred
I wanted him
way
to say something.
Yeah.
And he never really did. And that's
I
all.
Think if he was going to do that line one more time, it should have been when he was holding back Thanos' punch. But they did it in a montage sort of way in Infinity War. There was no vocalizations. There was just orchestra because they were also showing Wanda doing the Mind Stone. So,
but like when
that
Cap,
was the issue.
When Cap tightens the broken shield and he gets up that last time, he could have said something, you know, and I felt like there was some dead space there that needed something. Maybe it's not that catchphrase.
He could have said, I'm America's ass.
But, okay. I'm being serious. I'm just saying that I think they could have used some more dialogue. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. So do we go to Morag, Vormir?
Either any of the above.
Morag was pretty funny. Like watching them watch Star-Lord dancing to no music was pretty great.
They wrote so many versions of this script. One of the scripts had Star-Lord interacting with them, but they didn't know how to get him to be deterred from the Power Stone. So instead, they just punched him.
It's pretty funny.
Oh my god! And since Chris Pratt has been like an ass over the last 2 years, watching him get punched in the face was pretty great, and kicked in the nuts by Gamora later.
Sure.
He gets kicked in the nuts.
Now, the problem with the Morag scene is it creates like it
creates the two nebulas.
It makes zero sense to me that she would somehow be connected to herself through some cosmic network of
cosmic internet
technology.
Cosmic internet.
That's basically what it
is.
Yeah,
it is. It's
cosmic,
like,
Wi-Fi.
Like, then you could talk to anybody on any planet at any time.
Come in contact with them, because she can record.
Why wouldn't that technology be in a handheld option for Thanos' entire army? Or at least his children.
Yeah.
You know, right? Well, like, Gamora doesn't have that. You know,
Gamora lost very few times. She has very few cybernetics.
But I'm talking about, like, if you have the technology to communicate with somebody in another star system and you can implant that in a body, why isn't there a handheld communicator for that?
Because this isn't Star Trek, bitch. Like,
I'm just saying.
I mean, she has a point.
Like, it's not even built into
thank you.
It's not even built into the ships. The ships can't even do it. But somehow Nebula can do it.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, that's like the reason it's such a big problem for me is it creates the entire reason the second half of the film happens.
Yes.
Right.
Right. And if that doesn't happen, then the rest of the film doesn't happen. You know, it's kind of like the rat problem all over again.
Okay. So we already talked about the major problem with this film is the fact that there are no consequences to the time travel. Nebula gets to kill her past self and it doesn't matter. She doesn't even have like any remaining scar or anything.
No, because it's a totally different person.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, sure. And they kill past Thanos, which should mean the original snap never happened to begin with.
That's the problem. Every other form of time travel movie we have ever seen, you know, even the crappy ones like Jumper, you know, like Looper, they have rules to their time travel, and this one just doesn't.
Well, and they kind of make a joke about that early on, but that didn't really like make me go, okay, I guess I'll forgive everything.
A joke doesn't solidify anything.
It
just brushes
it
off.
If you use the Infinity Stones to do that type of stuff, then it's like paradox-free Futurama BS, right? But that's not how Thanos gets to present day. Thanos gets to present day using Pym particles that they're supposed to be out of.
Yeah.
Nebula somehow knows how to use this technology, even though it's past Nebula, who's never been on Earth before. But she somehow is able to bring Thanos and his entire ship there, and that's not using the Infinity Stones. So when you kill past versions of themselves, how are they still doing things?
It's true.
No explanation.
I mean, we could talk for hours about, you know?
So
about
let's
that.
Not.
But...
All right, so Vormir.
We all knew that, like, this is the thing for me, is it was a little anticlimactic because we all saw Infinity War.
Right.
You know that there's only one way to get the Soul Stone.
It was just finding out which team's going to
Vormir. Right, that was the... Well, once you knew that it was Clint and Natasha, it was like, okay. Then it was more just like, okay, well, which one of them's going to do it? And they played that up really well. You know.
It never...
Red Skull looks great, by the way. We got to really see him. And I was like, man, that looks like somebody I want to actually see in the movies.
They did a very good job with him. I will say it never crossed my mind that it would actually be Barton. Because I don't think she ever would have let that happen. Because he's the one with the family, right? He's already lost them once. She's not going to let that happen again.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And for me, it seals her arc really well. Because there's in the original Avengers movie, there's the conversation between her and Loki, right? And he's like, how can you possibly wipe out all that red? Well, I feel like this is as close as you're going to possibly get to doing that. Is bringing back trillions of people, you know?
Also, I think I'm the one that predicted Natasha would be dying in this movie. I don't know. Maybe, you might have agreed with me. You said
that there were going to be four.
Yeah.
And only two.
Right.
So.
I didn't get everything right, clearly. But you agreed with me, I'm pretty sure, on the on Natasha, for sure. Yeah. And Clint, I think.
Yeah, we both thought that they were both going to die. And honestly, the spoiler that I thought I had beforehand said that Scott and Clint had died. And so clearly somebody was just fucking with me.
Well, the spoiler that I had heard was that Wolverine is at the end credits. And I was like, for me, it was like, but what if it, like, I don't, like, I couldn't 100% say there's no possible way that this happened.
No, you couldn't, because you never know what banana bullshit they're going to pull out.
Like, I mean, they've stuck Spider-Man in Civil War in the last, like, month.
Yeah.
You know, true. So there was time to do it, but yes,
Hugh Jackman's around.
Yeah, no, I was glad that I took it with a grain of salt. The other spoiler was the Iron Man gauntlet that had all the stones, but the toy. That was the toy spoiler.
No.
I still had never seen that. Yeah. So somehow I missed that.
I don't know how you guys missed that.
I will say that I got very lucky. I was somehow able to avoid all the spoilers.
That was a very minor, like the one thing that actually got spoiled, the Iron Man gauntlet thing, that was a hugely minor spoiler. I did not really mind
hugely
that much in
minor.
The context of the film. Yeah, sorry.
Hugely minor.
Very, very minor.
Biggest minor spoiler I've ever seen.
I thought it was going to be more meaningful
than
it was.
You're a big minor.
I did think the two of them fighting out for trying to sacrifice themselves was a cool moment.
It was executed really well because you really didn't know which one was actually going to be the one, because you could say that Natasha wasn't going to let Clint, but I mean,
Clint also wasn't really going to let Natasha.
It was like, they could have crippled each. I mean, he shot arrows, explosive arrows at her and stuff like that. Like,
it reminded me of the fight they had in the first Avengers. And just like the fight that they had, they both did this one without stunt doubles.
Yeah.
So
it was cool. It was a good scene.
Yeah.
I think as good as you could have made something that was relatively predetermined.
I knew that she was going to be the one to die when she told him that she had no idea who her father was. And I'm like, well, they just said that, you know, her family has been the Avengers. They've said that multiple times in this film. They've indicated that's why she has stuck around at the compound. So this
who she is.
She's the mother of the Avengers, and she would give anything for it. And
another part of
it
this
worked.
Another part of this that made me question whether this was a Disney film was them showing the dead, crumpled, bloody body.
Oh my god! They
I was
did.
Like, what in the world
she
is
had
going
blood
on?
By her head. Gamora didn't have that. They were a lot closer to Black Widow.
And this
too.
Was red blood.
Yeah,
not purple Thanos blood.
Yeah.
Maybe it has to do with like the time ratio. The movie was long enough that there wasn't
right, they
enough.
They got another one.
You know, enough things in there. I don't know, but good scene. Overall.
Yeah.
So then Cap and Tony go back in time again.
To 1970.
There's some really cool moments in there. Tony with his father.
The de-aging on Howard Stark and Hank Pym was really good again. Mm-hmm. They did a great job with that. This is the second time they've had to do that for both actors.
And this is the first time that they've had a character from the TV shows cross over into a movie.
Jarvis was there.
Jarvis was the first character from the Agent Carter show to be in this. Same actor.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The scene, though, between Tony and his dad, those scenes, I think showcased what the MCU is going to miss by not having Robert Downey Jr. anymore.
Yeah. Because
he is just really good.
Really delightful to watch, yeah.
He is a damn good actor. And, you know, he doesn't always have to be in the suit. You know, he does some good stuff.
He didn't have to carry the whole weight of the MCU on his back. He didn't ever have to. Everybody around him is so strong and carries their films very well, but he still manages to be just a fucking standout character, actor, and even though the movies have kind of pulled back on their story-centric moments on Tony, like, he still steals scenes constantly. And
see, I don't think he completely stole that scene. I think when Cap it. Saw Peggy and was just watching her through the window, it was heartbreaking. And
that's a beautiful scene.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a lot of emotion happening in that scene.
Plus, having the two of them team up together, Cap and Tony again, was just wonderful.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Our second Community cameo Yvette Nicole Brown.
Yeah.
I barely recognized her, actually.
Well, she's lost a lot of weight, and she had a much different hairstyle than what she normally sports. So
they come back. Everyone comes back except for Natasha, which is sad, of course. And then things kind of just go off the rails.
So here's my problem. Natasha's death is barely touched on. Now, I was not expecting a huge funeral or something, but I did figure that the four men that lamented her death, five men, excuse me, would have said some words to everybody who was still there. You know, they still had a job to do. They couldn't put things on hold to recognize her sacrifice. The way they could later on in the film when everything's done, but
I mean, really, they had the time stones; they could have done whatever they wanted, right? Like, time travel screws everything up.
They should have done it. My problem with a lot of this stuff is Natasha's contributions to the team are often overlooked because she doesn't have superpowers, so she just gets overlooked, and I just felt that it.
See, I didn't have as much of a problem with that because Clint, because I'm a man. no, because Clint got the, they had a really touching moment. She got her screen time with Clint and, you know, her emotional sacrifice. We got to see Clint really upset afterwards when he wakes up with the Soul Stone in his hand or whatever. And we got to see his emotional reaction when he gets back. And I mean, as much as it would have been nice, because she was a standout character for me in this movie, I think that would have thrown the whole pacing of the movie off. Everything at that point was basically like, we're going full gear into the third act now.
And they did. Like, Hulk immediately puts that gauntlet on his hand, and he does the snap, and Scott Lang notices the birds. And then it gets blown to shit.
Yeah.
So, I gotta say, like, I'm torn between, like, being glad that nobody died, but the fact that nobody died in that explosion seems ridiculous.
They're all superheroes.
When I got the fake spoiler that Scott died, I was like, that's it! That's
He's
it! That, that missile to the chest kills Scott Lang.
Like, it was just, there were so many missiles into a normal-ish building. Like,
no, the compound is in no way normal.
That thing collapsed like a normal building collapses. Like, people were kind of crushed, but, like, nobody was unconscious. Nobody lost a limb. Nobody was killed. Like, they were...
Rhodey and Rocket were drowning, okay?
For a little while. But, like, they all end up totally fine from that. And that was one of the least realistic parts for me was, like, because the explosion was so intense and nobody gets knocked out from it.
Yeah.
So before this, Clint gets a call.
From Laura!
Yeah. So am I to believe that Clint's been paying a family plan on a cell phone for all these years and he kept her phone on a charger for 5 years waiting for this moment?
That's your problem. Not that it's Natasha a landline, doesn't Ryan. Get a funeral, but okay. Because of this.
Nobody has a landline in 2023 or
people
whatever.
People live on
takes.
Farms like that.
Oh my God. Maybe her phone was dusted and it came back.
Look, there's a lot of problems with the way the undoing
Bucky's
snap
arm was
works.
Dusted for no reason.
That's true.
Their clothes are dusted. Like, the phone was dusted too, I imagine. But
it was a full charge, luckily.
Yeah, of course. Everything was reset the way it was. She was at like 63%. No, but like the undoing of the snap is a very confusing thing that we could spend a lot of time talking about because it doesn't undo the last 5 years. But for the characters, for the people that were dusted, it's as if relatively no time has passed. So, for example, Spider-Man Far From Home.
He remembers being dusted and then a few minutes later.
He's back, but he's still in high school. With
why would he not be in high school? He's still high school age.
Right. But like what I mean is like his like. 5 years have passed, right?
His friends also got dusted.
All of them, everybody from the first
That's going to be the explanation in Far From Home. 100% guarantee you that's what it's going
to
be.
Okay.
He ended up looking like he was going to a college at the end of the movie.
I didn't. It looked like a high school to me.
It seemed like he,
but it's hard to tell. I mean, it doesn't say high school or college. You know, you're just guessing it's a school of some kind. And
yeah,
the previews from Far From Home make it look like it's still high
school. Far From Home is still his entire class from high school. So if that changes, like, you went to college with your entire same class.
It's not college. It's high school. So everybody had to be dusted.
But we still don't know when Far From Home takes place.
I think we know it's after this.
Anyway.
So now, you know, Thanos comes down and we get the big three showing up against him. There's some cool moments in that fight, guys.
No.
The coolest moments.
Epic moments.
Some
in
of
that
the best
fight.
Moments in the entire MCU, in my opinion.
Yeah.
When the hammer goes to Cap.
You should have seen the look on my face. Actually, look on my face.
Did you
was
pee?
Like. No, my like eyes were welling up, and I didn't know whether to cry or smile. It was like a beautiful thing.
I'm not saying it is the coolest moment in the MCU, but there's a good argument.
It very well could be. Yeah. It for me, it is the coolest.
Top three.
It's definitely got to be up there. There's a couple in this. In
him
this
using,
area.
I mean, when you take in him using the lightning and everything, he was whooping Thanos' ass.
And then later on, when they just like exchange them back and forth, and like they're fucking
like,
Renfest jugglers.
I'll take
like,
a bigger one.
It's like, so perfect.
There's some amazing moments in that fight scene. When Thor's got both of them is super cool.
I just love when Thor's eyes like get like all of ours, and he's like, "I knew it." Like,
well, because like there's that we've talked about this a bunch of times. The scene in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Did he hold back, or did he really not be able to?
We didn't really get an answer to that. I mean, we know he's worthy.
I think we did.
And I don't think so. Because in Endgame, things had changed for him.
And
you know?
We've
His
seen
life
in
has changed
Thor that your worthiness can change.
I totally agree with you. But it does move. He's the only one who ever
he nudges
moves
it.
The hammer.
But that doesn't
nobody
mean,
else does
but
it.
That doesn't mean he could pick it up.
Age of Ultron Cap can nudge it. Civil War Cap could not.
Yeah.
And, you know, Endgame Cap can swing it like it's nothing.
It was so good.
It was
oh my
fantastic.
God, it was
We're going to be, I can't wait for the influx of cosplayers that are Caps carrying Thor's hammer and the shield. That's going to warm my heart every time I see it.
I agree.
It's cool. It's such a cool scene.
I hate to skip over like a lot too, because this is also when Giant Man just emerges.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Like that was amazing.
And the on
look.
Your left scene. Oh my god.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
on your left.
So hang on. So I don't want to skip to that yet, because the fight gets really intense. Like we had talked about this.
He
I was pretty
beats
convinced,
the three of them down.
I was pretty convinced that Tony and Cap were both dying in this movie.
We okay? all were, I think.
Right? And so there's a couple of moments in this fight, like when the shield is busted and stuff, where I'm like, all right, this is it. And when
he's just
Cap tightens it
down
that
on
last
that
time
shield
and stands back up, and like the entire army's there. Thanos has had his speech about how it wasn't personal.
Cap is the
inevitable.
Last one standing.
This is when he's talking about.
Oh, yeah, but he's going to enjoy this one.
Right,
because
it wasn't personal until now.
And Cap was the last one standing at this
exactly.
point of the three.
It's literally him versus an entire army of aliens. And on your left is
oh my god, I got chills.
I do too.
It's so cool.
Hearing Anthony Mackie's voice again. I've
and
never
then seeing all the portals open up.
It was
my god, watching everybody step out. Like I'm getting chills now thinking about it, because it was so well done.
It's a really awesome sequence, just panning across like everybody freaking shows up in that scene. Who's
epicness
still alive.
Beyond epicness.
Like, it's so cool.
When they said,
it's really just Vision and Nat that's not there.
When they said, "Is this everybody?" I was kind of expecting one more portal to open up and Daredevil and Luke Cage.
Oh, poor Ryan.
I know. And Punisher. What would he have done?
It would have been a cool moment for Loki to show up, though.
Nah.
Oh, that would have been neat.
I think Loki's overused anyway, so
that's fine.
Well,
I'm
glad that he ended ambiguous, to be honest.
But it's an amazing scene. Seeing all the heroes show up together in that moment with the entire army of Wakanda is just like so on one hand,
it was powerful.
It's absolutely incredibly epic. I can't believe they pulled it off. On the other hand, how is that the only army that's available to help at all?
What, Wakanda?
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. They're amazing. They're clearly fantastic. But, like, their armies have fighter jets and stuff.
No, you're right. You're right. It's just their ruler is already a superhero. No other countries are backing this kind of war. They're not.
Yeah, but like this is happening in New York. You're telling me we can't scramble some jets? Canada can't scramble some jets. There's two massive militaries right there.
Justin Trudeau has shit to do, Derek. He's got tweets.
It doesn't make sense for me that look at the new Godzilla movie, King of the Monsters, right?
Do we have to?
Just for a moment.
No, thank you.
We bring Godzilla in to help us, right? But we still send in our own jets to do what we can. Why are there no jets? There's no bombers. There's no anything. We're in New York. There's no military.
There was none during the Avengers fight. There was first responders.
You're totally right.
But there was still no U.S. military involved.
I let it go because back then what they were doing was already above the scale of anything we had ever seen. But like for Endgame now, like this is it. This is the end of the entire world.
Well, it's the fourth invasion this world has seen.
And we're just sick of it, I guess. I don't know. But anyway.
Just bored.
I don't want to spend too much on it. But it's an amazing scene though.
Can we talk about all the fan service moments? Because that's what this fight was.
There's one in particular I'm sure that you're referencing that is very mixed among my Facebook friends in terms of whether it was good, whether it was bad, whether it was necessary, whether it was unnecessary.
I don't even care if it's any of that. I enjoyed it, and my theater enjoyed it. Everybody, mm-hmm. Screamed out, men and women. So.
I actually got a little emotional, surprisingly. I thought it was... We're talking about the moment when the A-Force tribute, when all the women are there.
So, Peter Parker... they're playing catch with the gauntlet, yeah. And Peter has it, and he falls down, and Carol drops in front of him. And this is after Carol's cool entrance, where all of a sudden, every... gun on Thanos' ship points to the sky instead of the ground.
Luna, come here, sweetie.
And it says something's entering the atmosphere, and then she comes pummeling down, and, Peter has the gauntlet, and Carol's like, "Hi, Peter Parker. I hear you have something for me." And, then he's like, "But how can you get it all the way through all that?" And the A-Force tribute. Okay, so... it was fun. It was a fun moment, and if nothing else comes of it, cool, but...
I don't care what movie it is, what scene it is. Anytime Valkyrie comes in riding a Pegasus, I am sold. I am in. I am all about this. But this whole thing begs the question, why didn't Doctor Strange just make a portal that they could just jump through?
Agreed.
To the van, right? There's so many other ways to do this.
Just going back to this scene, though, so... I'm with you guys on this. It was really emotional. For anybody out there who's like, well, was it needed? It's a movie about superheroes. The whole thing isn't needed. The whole thing is for our entertainment. It's for our enjoyment. And...
Well, I think the argument they were making was, at least the ones that I saw, was that it actually took you out of the scene because why is it just females that happen to go to this one spot and no other men are in the entire area?
I don't know. Why is it just Cap, Tony, and Thor that go up against Thanos? And it's
Well, but they didn't
even
have
though
a
there
big
were
posing.
Multiple people in the building.
Yeah, I mean
they didn't
still...
have a scene where they literally just stood there and posed.
They kind of did.
They did.
It may not have been as much because it's only three characters, right? But we've seen lots of scenes like this in movies before. The Fast and Furious franchise has scenes like this for
and they're all sake. Dudes.
It's not a new scene. It's new that it was a bunch of women superheroes. That's the only thing that was new about it.
If nobody wanted this, there wouldn't be a ton of fan art of all the female characters together. This is just the one... 30-second clip that, half of the fans wanted to see.
The one I saw complaining about it the most was actually a woman complaining about it, which I thought was interesting. But
look, everyone's going to have a different perspective on it. Sure. I really liked it. I'm hoping it may not be a sign of future projects, but it'd be cool if it was.
And it's I don't tribute, need it to be. An A-Force movie would be really cool. And if this is just...
But what's the point of A-Force if Carol can just do everything by herself? It's the same thing as the Justice League movie. What's the point if Superman
is
so powerful?
She can always be off in space.
Well, okay. Sure.
These are the adventures when she's not around, and then she gets her own movies.
There doesn't need to be points behind some of these films. They just, if they have good stories to tell, then they have good stories to tell. This was a 30-second moment in a 3-hour movie, and it doesn't need to be overhyped, you know? It was fan service.
I did think that the scene after, when it's like Spider-Man getting carried by all these different people to mm-hmm. the thing, I mean, it was cool, but it was a little distracting for me. It was a little, like, I don't know. It just seemed very forced.
I was more excited for the insta-kill to yes. actually do something. Like, that was fun.
Yeah.
It was a nice call.
Because we see that in Homecoming, and we're yeah. like, why? Why would that ever be there? And right. we're like, oh, this.
Thanos. no, it was definitely designed just to be like, here's everybody.
Yeah, here's fan service.
Right? Like, you know, when they give Black Panther the gauntlet for a few seconds, right? So he can run around with it. Like, it's just to show everybody, to show that this is the MCU.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm not complaining yeah. about no, 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 it. No, it was just, it just was very obvious fan service.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, having Rhodey and Pepper and Tony all fighting and all their arc beams going everywhere, like,
the
that
scene
was
with,
really cool.
Pepper and Tony back to back. Yeah. It was yes. very. Cool
a good
scene.
Moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're like, I really, like I said before, I thought Cap was going to die. And then Thanos, like, stomps on his chest and he doesn't get back up. I'm like, well, they're not going to kill him like that.
No, that's yeah, gross. That's not going to
happen.
You
know, and then they moved away from him. So I'm like, oh, I guess I was wrong. Then, you know, Carol comes in. She has her fight with him. It takes the power stone.
She gets
to the chest, man.
Bashed away. Yeah, pretty hard there.
Yeah. That had to hurt.
And then, you know, Doctor Strange has his little moment,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and Wanda has her moment.
Oh, well, right.
When
yeah.
she gets the line, when she looks him dead in the eye and says, like, you took everything from me. And he's like, I don't know who you are. And she's like, you will.
I was like, are we going House of M here? Yes. What's going on?
I was like, please melt his brain. I want to see it drip out of his ears. Let's do this. And they didn't.
No, they did not do that.
No. But Tony steals all the stones and makes his own Iron Man gauntlet.
And he ends the movie with, I am Iron Man.
Well, it's perfect because Thanos says, I am inevitable for like the fourth time in the yeah. movie or whatever.
He does.
Does the snap, nothing happens. And you cut to Tony, who says his tagline, you know.
And he has all the stones. And in our heads, like, I only thought he had taken like one or something. I didn't think he had had all of them.
Well, that's what I thought Dr. Strange was trying to say. It was like, you just have to remove one stone to stop the snap from happening. And I thought that's what he meant. He meant it's the one timeline.
Yeah.
So
here's another big plot problem I have with the movie.
Sure.
Thanos, in order to make the Infinity Gauntlet, had to go commit a genocide on an entire race, harness the power of a forge powered by a star to melt the metal to harness the power of 6 Infinity Stones. Tony could make one in a cave with a box of scraps.
Yeah, he's not Tony Stark. He's just
Thanos. I get that, but Tony doesn't have access to like metals that are more powerful than the star metal. Like,
except it's not metal, it's nanobots.
Well, whatever, like, it is. It's not more powerful than this.
Living.
You're telling me it's more powerful than the metal Mjolnir and Stormbreaker are made out of.
It can adapt.
I mean, look, Thanos does tear that armor apart pretty quickly in Infinity War, so it doesn't seem like it holds up a lot. It's just very flexible as far as its functionality. I'm with you. Like, clearly they went the route of, well, it has to be a gauntlet, because if it's not a gauntlet, that'll be weird, so we'll make another one.
Which is really upsetting.
He could have made a full suit. That would have been awesome.
In Avengers Assemble, Black Widow has all 6 stones at one point. Well, it was only 5 in there because of cost cutting and stuff. But she has all the stones, and she's like, they're like embedded in her neck, like a necklace. And it was really fucking cool. Like, she's just floating with these godlike powers, and she's having like 6 voices come out of her mouth. And they could have done other jewelry.
Right.
It didn't have to be a gauntlet.
That's what people are used to seeing, though.
Right.
And it also,
it's
a like,
symbol,
you wouldn't have been able to show his face after his whole body got burned up like
right.
a freaking.
And that's it. It goes on his right hand. And throughout the entire MCU, they've always damaged his left. So, like, a lot of people had theories that he was going to lose his left hand, or, you know, it was finally going to result in a heart attack because, you know, your left arm goes numb. But no. His right side. They fooled everybody. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, I never really noticed that, to be totally honest with you.
Through all the movies, he's always complained of how his left arm is sore.
It's
and so
always
a lot
in
of people thought
and,
in this movie he was going to time travel back and like his earlier self was going to get injured on his, and so it was going to make it a recurring injury or something.
Yeah,
but
I never noticed.
Nope.
It's a cool way for him to end, though.
He got the perfect story arc. And Pepper. Well, first of all, P- Peter just getting in your face and saying, like,
that was a little annoying.
Mr. Stark, we won.
His wife is right there. Like, come on.
He's got daddy issues, man.
I get that. But
he's got,
like,
Uncle Ben issues.
And Tony has daddy issues. Like, he wanted it. He wanted that little bastard by him. He did.
I guess. But Pepper, I felt bad for Pepper because she's like, get out of the way, bitch. This is my husband.
She literally moves him out of the way. But she's she does get a really good line, which is, you know, that he can rest now. And it's true because he really hasn't. Since he was in the cave and came up with the original design, he has not stopped.
And it was really good because you didn't get the obvious lines of, you know, I love you and I'll miss you and, you know, we're fine. You get the... you can rest now. And he is kind of just clinging to life for her to approve of all of his choices. And then he passes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a tough moment. But, I mean, I think we all kind of saw it coming. I'll say that that this was the resolution to Thanos also, which I found very anticlimactic, that he just got dusted and that was that.
I agree.
So that was my one complaint about that. But the stuff with Tony was handled well and with respect. And I actually think the Russo brothers, with every character that they had to make a major change to, they handled it very well. You know, Cap.
He did a
Nat.
Yeah.
Tony, all the big ones, they handled
brought
with great respect.
Decent resolution to the first six. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they had been telling us that this was the end of the Infinity Saga, and they made sure that that was the case, right? There's no more Infinity Stones in the present. There's no more Thanos in the present. And, you know, three of the original six are gone.
Tony started it. Tony ended it.
Yeah, you know, he did.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I think that that worked really well. You, of course, you know, there's some stuff at the end. Right, so they have to return all the stones. So,
well, we get the funeral scene
where we get to see everybody who is really important to Tony at some point or another.
Except for Coulson, which is really disappointing.
Yeah, I agree. The fact that the original members never got to find out in universe that Coulson was still alive—they
had
bothered
the kid
me
from
lot.
Iron Man 3, but they didn't have Coulson.
Yeah,
they brought
back Harley Keener, which I thought was a great nod. It would make sense that this kid sees Tony Stark die, probably on television, because it's probably discussed for ages afterwards, and he makes the trip because he was influential in his life. Tony Stark had a huge influence on that kid.
Do you guys think this scene was CG? Like,
yes.
They CG'd people in? Okay, I was going to say, there's no way they could get all these people into one scene.
No, none of those people shot on the same day.
That kid broke me out of the scene, though, because I had no idea who that was. I didn't recognize him.
And I think there's a lot of people that are probably
slightest.
Like that.
So I got really confused. I was more like, well, who the hell is that?
Unfortunately, the kid hasn't been in any major movie since Jurassic World, and therefore we didn't see him age.
Sure.
So that didn't help.
No, it didn't. And but from a viewer perspective, I would imagine that more people didn't know who that was than would like to admit it.
A lot of people had to look up who it was. And unfortunately, the articles about him being in the movie... they should have played up more. They should have said that we're bringing back this kid. That should have been an official announcement from Marvel instead of people sneaking onto IMDb and reporting it. Because that's the only reason why I knew, is because of those few articles I saw ahead of time.
Fair enough.
So then we moved on to...
Right. So, you know, Cap's going to take the stones back. And was there any thought in your mind that he was returning as planned?
Bucky knew that it wasn't going to go like that. I don't know why Hulk and
they didn't know
Falcon.
Him as well.
Yeah, but he literally like says, you know, take care of things while I'm gone. Like, he says that line like for 5 seconds. No, you're not coming back. We know you're not coming back.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, like, the reason we all thought he was going to die is you have to remove him. He's not going to stop. That's not who he is. If he's not going to stop with a busted shield and a beat up body in front of an army by himself, he's not going to stop.
Right.
Right. And this was a clever way to not have to kill him that had not occurred to me.
It was a beautiful way.
Yeah.
As a Cap fan, I was devastated, but also like incredibly satisfied. I mean, this is where I really started getting emotional in the movie was like Tony was emotional. But the Cap stuff really got me because he's not had happiness.
It was a buildup. Like, I wasn't crying when Scott and Cassie had their reunion, but I was like, man, they're hitting us hard with the emotions, and it's 30 minutes into the film, and then Nat dies at the halfway mark, and then, you know, you have all the resurrections, and hearing those lines from certain people coming back kind of choked you up, and then Tony dies, and then Cap gets his happy ending finally, and I'm gone, devastated. Man, when that little bastard child said, I want cheeseburgers, I was like, do you even know what you just said?
And Happy was like, I'll get you all the cheeseburgers.
All the cheeseburgers, yeah.
See, it's interesting. Man, for me, intense. Like, the emotional moments for me weren't any of those. It was the epic stuff, like Cap wielding the hammer or all the heroes showing up.
Oh, I was
portals.
Emotional to that, like, too, but it was like a happy emotion. This is where, like, I started to realize, you know, Cap isn't going to be in the movies anymore. And, like, you know.
It was weird. I wasn't sad about that. Because it wasn't a sad ending. He got everything he wanted.
Both of them, you know, got a great resolution. Their threads were completely tied. And that's what I think we all at this table wanted was...
So, here, I don't know if this is a plot hole or if I just missed something. When he was fighting Thanos, his shield got destroyed. But when he came back, or when he was sitting on that bench, he gave Falcon another shield.
Must have been a past version of the shield.
But then how did that other cat...
The same way Nebula can kill her past self, and we can snap the past Thanos out of existence. And
did he leave with the shield?
I thought he just left with the hammer.
That's what I thought, too. But I figured maybe I missed something. Maybe Tony repaired it, or Wakanda repaired it in the meantime or something. Who knows?
I thought he just had the hammer.
He could have gone to the past and gotten a new shield, just like Thor got his hammer.
Right, but Thor brought his hammer back, because otherwise it would have caused a paradox. Or Cap brought Thor's hammer back for him. So that's why I was confused with that part. Mm. But we didn't talk about Falcon getting a shield. Was that surprise you guys, or did you?
I was a little upset that Bucky didn't get a final conversation, but I like Sam Wilson Cap a little bit more than Bucky Cap in
Except
the comics.
For that fucking beard. What was with his beard? Did that bother you guys? Falcon's beard looked really weird in that scene.
I didn't even
notice. Maybe it's just me.
No, I thought it worked perfectly. It made me a little confused for the title of their show. Because, like, is he not going to be Captain America? Because that seems like a really missed opportunity now.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll have to see.
See, I thought when Falcon said that it doesn't feel like his, or it feels like somebody else's, that they were going to give it to Bucky. Like, I don't have a problem with Falcon Cap, but Bucky seems like he earned it. And he's not a cocky character ever since his time in Wakanda. He's way more Captain America-like, I feel like.
How did he earn it any more than Sam? Like... He murdered
he's been
tons
through,
of people.
Sure, but he's also had a huge redemption arc, and he's been, you know, he was Cap's friend from back in the day. So I think his relationship with Cap is way deeper than is with Falcon.
I don't think he's had much of a redemption arc. He was cryogenically frozen for an unknown amount of time in Wakanda. He worked on a farm in Wakanda and then fought against Thanos. But everybody fought against Thanos, right? So he hasn't done anything on his own to redeem himself.
I just think that he's personality-wise a better fit, because Falcon comes across as cocky and kind of arrogant and full of himself, and Cap was never that to me. Granted, this is a different person.
Yeah.
So, but I just thought Bucky would have been the more natural progression. I'm fine with it. I'm happy that the Cap shield lives on, and I hope that Sam Wilson does it justice. But I definitely was surprised by that, and I thought it was going to go to Bucky. And I'm kind of sad that Bucky didn't really get a scene with him at the end.
Yeah. I really wanted them to just have a little conversation, because I felt like at least that he earned. I don't know who is going to be the better Cap on screen when Chris Evans has just been so idealistic, and he is now my version of Captain America.
There won't be another Cap.
Exactly. So I don't know who would be better or worse. I really don't. I do know what I like in the comics a bit more, and that's Sam Wilson, but he's definitely not the comic version.
Winter Soldier in the comics is kind of a prick anyway. But
Bucky definitely deserved at least a conversation with his friend.
But when you saw the ring on Cap's hand, oh my God, how did that make you feel? Did you get any feels from that, Derek?
Yeah. So Derek came home and he's like, I don't know how we're going to do this, but I really want to incorporate the song that they danced to into our wedding.
It's been a long, long time. Funny story about that song is that the song is about a soldier coming back from war to his woman, girlfriend, wife, whatever. And so that when I found that out, that really hit me. Like, he's finally done with the war and is now with... It was such a beautiful... I actually listened to the song on the way here, and it gave me chills hearing it, even outside the movie theater.
Like, so, timey-wimey stuff, because there's not any consequences. I don't know. Is this a new timeline where he and Peggy get to have kids? Or is this a timeline where he is the dad? He was the dad the entire time, and he made out with his niece.
I mean, I don't think he made out with his niece. I'm going to say that's probably not. I hadn't even thought about that. And but I don't now you think don't about want that. To.
The whole. I mean, that's the problem. The time travel in this movie really doesn't make any sense.
I'm going to go with it's a new timeline because I don't want
that intersects with this timeline somehow. Yeah. But
it creates some interesting conversation, though, because if every time jump was a different timeline, then, you know, they only kind of succeed in one of many timelines that they've now created. So they've actually created more timelines where this bad stuff happened than they had before. It, you know, would be one way to look at it then. And otherwise, you just have some...
So like, making out with your niece probably isn't the worst.
Yeah, that's like barely an offense. Yeah.
Like, but like, because that's such a small problem that time travel creates. Again, you have Nebula killing her past self, past Thanos being destroyed. You've got
Loki running away with the Tesseract.
Those three alone are pretty freaking huge.
Yeah.
You know, there's some other stuff in there. Like, we had talked a bit about, like, where's Gamora? Did Gamora get snapped away? I don't think she would have, because she had betrayed Thanos at that point, but she's missing. We don't really know where she is. Like, there's just a lot of confusion that this movie creates at the end.
Are we getting a As Guardians of the Galaxy movie now? Is that what's
next? Yeah, so let's talk about that. This pretty much will wrap our episode.
I want to say that the scene with Peggy and Cap dancing, though, was beautiful. We didn't really touch about that, but, like, the slow pan into, like, the picket fence house and, like...
It was a very clever
way. I lost it.
It was a very clever way to not have to kill him.
It was so perfect.
You know, because, I mean, honestly, I couldn't have come up with... I was racking my brain with, like, they have to kill him. Like, he can't live on.
Yeah.
Right? Now, it didn't occur to me that they'd be doing time travel to this extent. So...
yeah, it was beautiful. Anyway, we can move on. I just wanted to make sure we recognize that scene.
So, out of everything that this wraps, this also opens up a lot for the future. Like, where we go from here. So, most obviously is Guardians 3,
does it not have Thor?
Exactly.
Because I feel like it has to, otherwise you have to explain why he's not there anymore.
But here's my problem, and this might be a problem for you guys too. I love James Gunn. I love Taika Waititi. I do not want to get rid of either one of them. And if you bring Thor into the Guardians of the Galaxy, then that means that probably that's going to be James Gunn directing that, and Taika Waititi might have some input, but really... not going to be a part of it. And everything he did with Thor Ragnarok was wonderful. And I've watched that movie probably more than I've watched any other MCU movie. And I love it more every time. And I would be really devastated if we didn't get another Thor with him directing it.
I mean, that's fair. I'm not going to argue any of that. They just set it up very specifically that it would just be a totally wasted scene if he doesn't end up in the next Guardians.
It could be very similar to how he appeared in Doctor Strange, where maybe he starts off like that and then it's not there anymore. Like, he was in the Doctor Strange post-credit scene and that was it. So we don't know.
And then Doctor Strange was in Ragnarok for that scene, you know, which was cool. But
yeah, I mean, this one just feels a little bit different, though, because, like, he's handed off the mantle of ruler of Asgard to Valkyrie, right? He's gone on a spaceship and they're out in space arguing about who the new captain is. Right. So, like, that doesn't feel like a part-time temporary
thing. Our thing. Phase 4 has clearly been set up with multiple stories, but they're not making any official announcements, and it's because they're focusing on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And we know all about that and what they're doing with 6 TV shows coming out right away. Like, we're going to get to see all those almost November. November is going to have at least one Marvel show and The Mandalorian and all the Disney movies that have been released before. So Phase 4 has been quiet, but we've got Black Widow shooting as we speak. We've got Doctor Strange, Black Panther, and Captain Marvel all greenlighted.
Shang-Chi.
Second movies. We've got Eternals and Shang-Chi starting new franchises. Thor 4 has been pitched. There's a, which means there's a probably somewhere. A script outline, not fully fleshed out, but they like it. And Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth are back on board if they do this.
And so is Taika. He saved another one.
Guardians 3 has a script and a director, and they're moving forward. So, like, we know all the pieces. This Far From Home is going to finish the 5-movie deal that Sony has with MCU, but both of them are benefiting from the character so much. I doubt a new deal won't come of it. Like, I'm sure.
And they did say that we'd hear a lot more news about Phase 4 after Spider-Man Far From Home.
Exactly. So we'll see stuff. Rounds
out the phase.
Yeah, we'll see more stuff soon. But the main thing it sets up is Guardians 3. And it kind of needed to be, considering all the horse shit we've been through with Gunn over the last year and a half.
I kind of just want it to be the Guardians to be the Guardians. Mm-hmm. And I want the Revengers. I want, you know, Valkyrie, Thor, Korg. Meek.
Hulk can be there. Hulk can be there.
Yeah, either way, I don't care. I like Banner Hulk, so I'd be okay with that. But yeah, like, that's what I want. Them to get their own kind of ensemble film, smaller ensemble film like Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'd like to see them in space again, too.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Bring in Beta Ray. Now it's time. Like, it's a good time. He could be
the villain. Like, make him the villain and then have a redemption arc for the real villain and have the Adam Warlock.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, who knows, but... I don't know.
The most teased character to not show up
in any MCU. Movie. Yeah.
And I'm Adam Warlock is boring, guys. Yeah, he's not that exciting. Boring.
I don't care. He's just been teased a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd Was that just Cocoon and Guardians?
Bring back Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
You're like, son of a bitch. I'm sorry I stole that. Do you want to bring back Cosmo the dog? Because he was cute.
That
too.
Was good. Yeah. He could be in the Revengers. I love it. So did you guys stay till the end credits to see if there was anything after the credits?
Of course we did.
Yeah, I mean, there's always something, and it's not a scene per se, but...
No, but you could hear the hammer on
audio
the
audio stinger
at
the end of the movie, which I had to explain to people what the hell an audio stinger is, because that's a thing.
It's just a sound, guys.
Yeah.
It's just a sound.
I mean, it's supposed to be Tony working on armor.
Well,
right?
It's the sound from Iron Man 1 when he's first building the armor.
Right, that's what I thought.
When he's in the cave with scraps.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure.
Also, fun fact, Natalie Portman was not actually filming new scenes for this movie. Those were deleted scenes from Thor the Dark World.
But she still got credit, and she got a small paycheck.
Yeah.
She did say that she would come back for Thor 4 if two circumstances. One, Taika directs, because she wants to work for him.
And she gets to be Thor now?
No. She doesn't want to be Thor, but she does want to have superpowers.
I like Natalie Portman.
Jane Foster, but she's not as Jane Foster.
But we don't, like, was that her or was it the direction? Because Thor was pretty freaking different back then, too. So I'd like to see another opportunity for her.
Jane Foster has had two different superhero personas in the comics now, and... Natalie just said that she'd like to play more of that and less Damsel.
That's fair.
I get that. Yeah. You're in a superhero movie. I want to be a superhero too. Like,
the MCU's changed a lot since The Dark World, and I think that, you know, maybe she would do better under a different director.
That's
different constraints.
Everybody did better under Taika than they did.
Yeah, he brings out really good things from people.
Phase 2 was a difficult time for the MCU. If you take out the Winter Soldier, you know, it was a very complicated time.
It's true.
And Guardians.
Yeah.
But those were the two 2014 movies, and the first time they had brought in new directors for both. So, yeah, it was good. Okay, guys, letter grades.
Do we rank this? Do you guys have any way? Like, I feel like I can't rank. I don't know where to rank this.
I've struggled ranking the team-up films with the solo films anyway, because how do you compare a movie like Iron Man and the Winter Soldier to Endgame? It just seems like a weird thing to compare.
I think Endgame took my ensemble, so Avengers was my favorite, and I think Endgame is my favorite now, but Avengers is still number 2, Guardians is number 3, and Ultron's number 4.
It's hard for me because I'm very impressed that they were able to pull off what they pulled off. They should not have been able to do that.
Right.
You know? But again, it's standing on the shoulders of essentially 21 other movies that it could not have been made without, which isn't the same thing as some of the other films. I mean, you did Iron Man alone. You could have done The Winter Soldier alone. You did Guardians alone. Even the first Avengers movie could have been done in a bottle if they had just changed a couple of minor things. Endgame doesn't work that way. And so it's hard for me to rank it. I would definitely give it an A. I'm thoroughly impressed with what they were able to do. Same. I'm pretty surprised.
Yeah, it gets an A.
Yeah, I'd probably be A minus somewhere in there. There was a lot of the paradox things I can't ignore, and
I know. I'm with you.
The fact issues that Thanos with a few characters
was a huge problem during the he hindered the movie rather than helped it.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really thinking pluses and minuses. Yeah, I mean, I think an A minus is fair. I think giving it like a 90, 91 is fair.
Because 90 would probably be where I'm at, sitting right at the
I love science fiction. I've watched a lot of time travel movies,
but this was nowhere near the best that's been done.
No one is known to be able to perform time travel, so I'm not really sure anybody's in a position to say what should or should not happen when time travel takes place.
Anything with consequences is more fun because there are more stakes involved.
Right. And I need rules. I need time travel rules. And there were no rules in its own movie.
Well, we need space travel rules too. And they came up with those. They came up with the honeycomb like portals to jump around instead of using like warp drive or Chewy punching it like that's.
Before we end this, I do want to say that I'm really impressed that Derek did not reference the Voyager episode called Endgame at all, which had basically the same plot as this movie. So,
I mean, it does.
Eerily similar.
There were a lot of memes going around the Star Trek community.
Oh, were there?
About this? Yeah, the Voyager finale is called Endgame, and it deals a lot with time travel. It's not as similar as you might think, but because one character travels back in time to one point to change.
That's true. It wasn't multiple characters doing multiple plots.
And there's only time travel the one time. One character does it one time. She doesn't even go back. Like, there's none of that.
But the fact that it has time travel and
it's Endgame is funny to me because it's almost 20 years. It's 18 years. And so it's pretty funny that that's the case. I wasn't going to bring it up. The name is relevant and the fact that there's time travel, but otherwise they're pretty different.
Well, and that they were trying to change the future, or she was trying to change the future. Yeah. You know, that's all.
Yeah. The premise is, of course, if you don't know, so Voyager gets lost on the other side of the galaxy.
People die.
Future Janeway comes back in time to get Voyager home faster because a lot of people died along the way.
Right. Or went crazy.
Right. And so she wants them to get home sooner, and she does that. And, you know, it's a very controversial episode. Some people truly hate it. Some people really love it. Yeah.
I just thought it was funny that you refrained from bringing that up at
all. Greg and I should talk about it. We do our own Endgame review and have it be.
That's hilarious.
On red shirts. Yeah. Red shirts and runabouts. All right. Anything else, guys?
This has been a long podcast.
Yeah. Almost 2 hours.
Yeah. Yep. But I mean, it marks the end of the Infinity Saga.
Yep. Yeah.
And the last episode of Screen Heroes is we're announcing it right now.
No. Not quite.
Oh.
Not quite.
No, I still have to go see Detective Pikachu. Screw you guys for that, by the way. I'm going to be sick for that episode. I'm going to call in.
You're going to miss out, man. I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Well, I'll be going by myself, I'm pretty sure.
You can come with us.
I don't know if I want to do that.
That's hurtful.
Your girl's not going?
Negative.
She doesn't.
She has zero interest.
Zero interest. She doesn't play Pokemon Go with you?
No.
That's okay. I get it.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm not upset. I told her if there's any movie you're going to miss this year with me, then that's fine. I'm really going to be okay with that.
No, just come with us.
Yeah, we'll see.
Come on, buddy.
Yeah, come with
guys. I'm not going to commit on the air, I'll tell you that for sure. I don't want there to be any proof of whatever happens.
Fair enough. All right, well, we should probably wrap things
up. Okay, guys, thank you so much for joining us for Endgame. You can follow Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. You can follow Heroes Podcasts at Heroes Podcasts. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can go to the website heroespodcast.com. You can listen to our podcast every Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Thursday. On all major podcast streaming apps, including Apple Podcasts. You can do iTunes, that is the same thing. Spreaker.
Spotify.
Yeah, listen to us on Spotify.
Actually, podcasts on Spotify works really well.
Yeah, it's good. I like it a lot. You can follow Ryan at Buster Props on basically Instagram. That's your main one.
Yeah, that's about it.
You can follow Derek at the Star Trek Dude, basically on Twitter. Yeah. And you can follow at Siren Ray, me, on lots of things.
Vero.
with
it's Zack just Snyder. Me and Zack Snyder. That's it, man. No, I haven't opened that app in months. Don't follow me there.
Release the Snyder Cut.
Anytime I hear of a new thing, I just go and grab my screen name so nobody else uses it, and then I get rid of it.
One of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't want anybody else using mine. Somebody is using mine on D&D Beyond. On D&D Beyond, somebody has Siren Ray already.
What happens?
I'm very upset.
They're probably slandering you on there. Probably making people think you're racist and stuff.
All right. On D&D. On that note.
You hate orcs.
I hate orcs.
Let's close up.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.